My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me. And I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes you. See Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A. And in the background, you may be hearing some grinding because my dog is chewing a bone. But we're with
that's
me.
That's what she said.
Well done. Everyone should check out The Office. Well done. And in the state of Michigan?
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going?
It's going well. Happy Valentine's Day.
That's right. Today is Valentine's Day. We're recording later in the evening. So anybody who, such as Mike, went out with his wife already, and me and my wife did our exchanges earlier today.
You do realize that people listening to this are not listening to this on Valentine's Day.
That is true. That is true.
Okay.
But we are recording.
Give some belated happy Valentine's Day.
Yes.
So, we're trying to be nice, Mike.
I'm just saying.
That's right.
You'd be better off wishing him a happy St. Patrick's Day.
And we've been pretty much getting him out almost instantaneously, 7 days later, each episode recently. I still have those ones in the queue.
7 days later?
Well, we do it weekly, so there's no reason to just release seven episodes in one. There you go. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's always weird saying in the state of New York, because technically you are where three states meet, which is kind of cool, actually.
But I am on the New York side of it.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
And the novelty wears out in 8 seconds.
Yeah. That's true. My brother had a great novelty until he moved 2 years ago to another house. But his driveway, at the end of his driveway, he was in a different time zone.
What? That would be a pain in the ass.
Lived right on the time zone between East and Central time. So right now he actually lives in Central, but he's on East Coast for TV and work. But his prior house was actually the end of his driveway. Half of his land was actually in a different time zone. It's kind of weird. Is that cool? But I guess the novelty wears off.
I would just think that would be annoying. But I said, it's not like it's you're in the Bugs Bunny cartoon where he crosses the Mason-Dixon line. Oh. And there's a big white line, and as soon as he steps over, he's in the deep south with plantations. And, it's not like you step over, here's, the New York Jersey and Pennsylvania line, and you step over from one and you're in on Broadway, and then suddenly you're in Amish country. It doesn't
work like that.
Doesn't work that way.
Right.
It would be neat if it did. But it might take a couple of days for that to get tiresome.
Right. It is interesting. Well, I'm close to the Massachusetts border. I'm only like 4 miles away, 5 miles,
oh,
or whatever.
My goodness, what are we even talking about?
I don't know. And Chrissy's close to the New York border. She's
where is she, out. Phil? Where does Chrissy live?
Speaking of, we have a Connecticut American with us.
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy. Nice. Nice. Very good. Excellent. Yep. My wife got Manny Petty and Nicki Minaj perfume.
Oh, my God.
Very
really?
Nice.
Was that for her or was that what she got you?
Very fun. Very fun. Well, I already got her the Taylor Swift perfume, and I already got her the Katy Perry, and I already
oh
got her the Paris Hilton.
Does she actually appreciate these gifts, or does she just roll her eyes at you?
No, she actually likes it a lot. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah. So,
I think that's
so that, now we understand why they got married.
Right.
There you go.
It's a match made in heaven.
That's right. Yeah, so we were playing Nicki Minaj music all night because the kids wanted to hear it. So that's what we did. We did play Throw, though, by Michael Jackson because my youngest loves that song.
Who doesn't love that song? Yeah.
That is
well,
good.
I'm sure Michael Jackson would be happy that small children are listening to his music.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We're really not going there, are we?
Moving on. All right, so some news. We're going to skip all the preliminary stuff, like our other adventures.
We can just stop telling people about it and just do it that way.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. But this is the second time we're doing it, so for folks who don't know what's going on. Dark Discussions, www.darkdiscussions.com, where we discuss a horror film or a genre film weekly, and we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. So any news anybody want to bring up? Actually, 4 hours and 6 minutes, Far Cry New Dawn is unlocked on my Xbox and is officially released.
I was just sitting here thinking about myself, what's he talking about? It's not Game of Thrones.
right. That's actually 60-something days away. So that's good. So Far Cry New Dawn. So I'm happy about that. That'll be damn good. Let's see. Happy Death Day is coming out and something Battle Angel, Alita Battle Angel or something.
Mm-hmm. Alita Battle Angel comes out today and is prepared to take nothing by storm.
This is true. And then Happy Death Day, I think, comes out today too, right? Happy Death Day 2.
Sequel, Happy Death Day to You.
Yes, I haven't
number
checked.
Number 2, letter U, like Prince.
That's right. I haven't checked the reviews yet, but I'm sure it'll be fine. Maybe.
Last time like I checked, it was 2% higher than Alita Battle Angel.
Yeah, so actually, Jason Lloyd has already seen it, and he says, if you like the original, you'll like this one, but if you didn't like the original, you won't like this one.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so Happy Death Day actually has 66% good reviews. Alita Battle Angel, 59% good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Beast, my top genre film of 2018, is now on Shudder for free. It arrives today, so that's a good film everybody should check out. High recommend. Any other news anybody wanted to bring up? Anything?
Nope.
No, Mike? I don't have anything.
Mike may have something.
He's digging.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't want Eric to hear me chewing.
Appreciate that.
So, I went to see...
Wait, you just got back from dinner.
I know, I was just thinking that too. Didn't you just go out for dinner for Valentine's
Day? Yeah,
That's what she said.
Oh, man.
Missed it. All right. So, I went to about 2 weeks ago, I went to see the premiere of a film called Killer Clown and the Candyman, or Meets the Candyman, which was it's an independent movie, and it was a free premiere in the grand old state of New Jersey. And it's basically about, the director was inspired by Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman.
Oh, the 1970-something film?
Yeah, and he said, "Well, what's really the monsters of today? Are the serial killers?" And so he basically makes a movie in which John Wayne Gacy, the Killer Clown, meets Dean Corll, the Candyman. And it's every bit as tasteless as you could possibly imagine.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, it sounds a little tasteless.
Yeah, he put out warnings because it was a free screening and said, don't bring your kids. So naturally, people brought their kids and ended up walking out. But he did say, afterwards that if people aren't walking out of this, I made a mistake. It's Peter, I think it's Jacelone, Jacelone. It stars Edward X. Young as Dean Corll and Jeremy Woodworth as John Gacy. And it's a weird film, and it's not going to be for everybody. It is a very low-budget film. I was never bored watching it. I'll give him credit for that. It's hard to say it's a film that I enjoyed watching, though, because basically Gacy and Corll meet up by chance. And they were actually contemporaneous, acting around at the same time, and kind of sit down and share stories. And there's there's all these flashbacks of their real life crimes, and these are very seriously done, recreations.
Ooh, that's within, very tasteless.
Yeah. Which was really disturbing. Yeah. And yet, when they flash to the quote unquote present, which is like 69 or so, 70. Where the two of them are chatting, it kind of veers in the opposite direction to more almost camp, and kind of off the wall and over the top stuff leading up to an eventual fight between the two of them that feels like it could have come out of like a Three Stooges movie. So the tone is really weird and all over the place. It doesn't do anything to trivialize the crimes themselves. Those are all done, for lack of a better term, with actual respect. It's just the buffoonishness of the two men when they're discussing what they've done together. That's just, it's very strange. It is very, very strange. But they're going to be hitting the festival circuit now and the convention circuit. And if you have an interest in something like that, and again, it will not be for everyone, you might want to give it a try. It is very much an exploitation, grindhousey kind of film. I did manage to get an interview with Edward X. Young at the end, and maybe I'll share that when I get a chance.
Now, how do you hear about a thing like this?
Well, I happen to know Edward X. Young, the actor. I've met him a couple of times at conventions. I saw him recently at the Weekend of Fear in New Jersey last October. As he was one of the guests there, and we were talking, and he was promoting this film that they had already shot, and I guess were in the middle of editing at the time. And so I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he gave me the heads up.
Gotcha. How many people showed up? A lot?
Yeah, it was surprisingly full for it. Yep. Was a Sunday. It's free screening on a Sunday night in an actual theater.
What city?
I can't remember which city off the top of my head.
Is it near New York City itself?
Yeah, it's pretty close to New York City. It's about 90 minutes from me.
Okay.
All right. Northern New Jersey.
So like Sea Caucus. Or Jersey City.
It wasn't Jersey City. I have been to Jersey City recently.
Or one of those places.
Yeah, somewhere around there. So.
Right. Well, the place that Frankie's from. Where was Frankie from? I forget. Anyway, all right. Sounds good.
So again, it's the Killer Clown meets the Candyman. Keep an eye out for it if that's the kind of thing that you like.
Now, speaking of conventions, it's looking like it's pretty official that Dark Discussions will be at ScareCon New England.
Nice.
Got information yesterday, and it's looking good. So further details coming, and this time Eric's joining us.
I am. For Woo-hoo! The first time I'll be at ScareCon, so I'm looking forward to that. And also, they just announced their first booked guest yesterday. It looks like Heather Langenkamp is going to be at the show, so that's pretty awesome.
That is awesome, and Eric's a huge Nightmare on Elm Street fan.
I have a copy of Nightmare on Elm Street autographed by Wes Craven, so I'm going to bring it along and see if I can get Heather to autograph it as well.
Nice. That would be awesome, actually. Yeah. Cool. Speaking of Nightmare on Elm Street. I just bought the box set.
Nice.
It was only $23 when I bought it. I think it's back up to 30 something. But yeah, it's got all the films, all 7 original Nightmare films.
Some of the later numbered sequels are a little meh, but 1, 3, and I thought even a new Nightmare was pretty solid.
Yeah, I don't mind 2. I think 2 is a little underrated. It's starting to pick up.
I gotta rewatch it. I don't think I've seen it since it came out.
And I always liked 4, but I have not rewatched 4 in a very long time. For me, 6 is just just ass. Yeah,
yeah.
That's, 6 is awful.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
What about 7? Is 7 all right?
I like 7. That's 7.
Is
Nightmare.
Supposed to be really good.
It's a fresh restart. And you, yeah. As a Scream fan, Phil.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You will see a lot of connections.
Yeah, so, a new Nightmare is very meta.
What was doing and where he went with Scream.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I hear that this was like a trial run for Scream, kind of, sort of. Yeah, nice. So, yeah. And then there's an extra disc that has over 3 hours of special features.
Nice. And if you've never seen the Never Sleep Again documentary, it's really long, but it's quite well done. Worth watching.
Nice.
I do have a couple VOD titles I wanted to hit on. Should I do that?
Hey, Eric, Never Sleep Again, The Making of a Nightmare on Elm Street. Is that this one?
Yeah, probably. It's
okay,
like
because
it's
on...
it's like 8 hours long or something.
Oh, okay. So, well, then maybe that's not the one here, because that's on one of the discs. But I'll have
it's
to check
possible.
It out.
Yeah, check it out. Yeah.
Now, you were going to say you wanted to mention some films you saw.
Yeah, just a couple of VOD titles I actually kind of want to warn people off of. I watched a couple. One was The Final Wish, which looked kind of promising. Has Lin Shaye in it, and Tony Todd was also billed. However, Tony Todd is in the movie for, I think, a total of 2 minutes. And it's not a great movie. So it might catch your eye. You might think, ooh, that looks intriguing because it's got well-known horror names in it. Not so much. Unfortunately, it's not that great of a movie. And the other one I want to warn, I'm really sad about this, but I need to warn people off of The Man Who Killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot. Because I saw that title. I was like, oh, I got to watch that movie. That's going to be a hoot. Guess what? This movie is not a hoot. I was expecting this to be all camp and totally goofy. No, it's a drama. And it's actually a serious movie about Sam Elliott, this old man contemplating his life and actually regretting his involvement in the war and not having been able to spend time with the woman he loved. So yeah, that's not at all what I was expecting with a title like The Man Who Killed Hitler and then The Bigfoot.
Noah could have given you a better idea of what it was about. The trailer.
Well, we don't watch trailers, Mike.
Yep, that's
because they often don't give you a better idea about what the movie is.
That's true. I'm with Eric on that one.
So, if you're looking for a campy romp, which is what I was expecting from that movie, it's not that. So go somewhere else if you're looking for a campy romp.
All right, that's too bad. Mike actually brought that up as
now,
one of
what
the
did you
films.
Think of it as a drama?
I mean, it was a well-made movie. Sam Elliott was good. You know, it was just so in opposition to what I was looking for from the movie that I was taken so off guard that I couldn't process it as what it was on a first watch. I was just sitting there going, why isn't this what I was expecting?
Makes sense. All right, yeah, because Mike, you brought that up as a 2019 preview episode that we did a couple of weeks ago with Kevin Letts, and you mentioned this film. Yeah. Speaking of the first film that you saw, the one with Lin Shaye, Jason Lloyd was excited to watch it too, and he said it was terrible, which is too bad. And then,
yeah, well, that's why I mentioned these two, because I know that the people seeing these might get all excited about them, and I just want to kind of throw a bucket of water on
them
before they walk into it.
There's certain actors you have to recognize if you're a horror fan, where their name meets quality, and then there's actors like Lin Shaye and Tony Todd, where their name means they got a paycheck. And I'm not trying to say that they deliberately choose shitty movies. They're people, they have bills to pay just like the rest of us. Right. It's a job. But they're not big enough, certainly not Tony Todd. Maybe Lynn Shea is after the Insidious films, that they can just not make movies that they think are going to be crap.
Well, and that's the thing, is that Lynn Shea was so good in the last Insidious film that you figure, oh, okay, this is another good one that she's in. And then,
well, and she wasn't like, it wasn't like she was bad in the movie. It was just not a great movie.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's too bad. And then, Eric, the two of them, where can you find these films? Or I should say, where should you avoid these films? Are they on like Shudder? Or...
I found them on iTunes. They're probably on other services as well.
Gotcha. All right, very well. Any other news, anybody?
The only other film I've seen, I'll throw out there, I just watched it two nights ago, is Anna and the Apocalypse, which was the
it's a musical, right?
Yeah, it's the zombie apocalypse musical Christmas movie of the year. It had a limited theatrical run at the end of 2018. I have no idea where we'd consider putting it, if it's a 2018-2019 film. It hit streaming a week or two ago. It's fun. It's not, I don't think it's like Shaun of the Dead memorable, although it certainly has some reflections of that.
Any stars of note?
The only actor I can remember recognizing is Thoros of Mir. I can't remember the actor's name.
Thoros of Mir.
It is the character he plays on Game of Thrones. He's the drunken priest.
Oh, yeah.
Hung around with the guy with the flaming sword.
Yeah, the guy with the man bun. The guy with the man bun.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, he had a ponytail. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he plays the school headmaster.
Gotcha. So this is a British film, then?
It is a British film.
Gotcha.
Songs are kind of catchy for what they are. It's, Shaun of the Dead meets High School Musical, I guess.
Yeah, I'll be avoiding that film just for the fact that it's a musical.
Yep. And since I know we're not covering it, I thought...
Bill hates music. It. That's why I listen to Nicki Minaj.
Oh, that was low.
Eric, you can't see it, but I'm high-fiving you right now.
Oh, this is low. Now, let me ask you this, Mike. Where can people watch or avoid, depending on your taste?
It's very easy to avoid. Just don't do anything. You can watch it on probably any streaming service right now for rent.
Okay, so it's a VOD payment. Okay, gotcha. All right, very well. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up?
I'm good.
All right, so I guess we can get into our topic for tonight. So, Eric, why don't you discuss what we're going to talk about tonight?
All right, tonight we are going to be talking about the movie currently in theaters, but probably not for very long, so catch it if you want to. Starring not Alicia Silverstone and not Ben Affleck, The Prodigy.
Did you really just say that?
Nurturing genius.
He's our little prodigy.
Miles isn't wearing like other kids.
His intelligence is off the charts. I don't have an exact score, but it'll be very high.
He's special.
Mommy? What's wrong with me?
Miles is having a very difficult time making friends. I want you to tell me everything that you remember.
I don't remember anything.
Miles' brain is extremely well developed. He may need a specialist.
You must be Miles. Miles is dangerous.
I don't feel safe with him in the house.
Oh my God. He's so different now. I feel like I don't know him.
Will you always love me? No matter what I do.
That's right. Prodigy is, as we stated, a 2019 film. It is a film that is Orion Pictures. But it is a horror film, and it's directed by a guy named Nicholas McCarthy, who actually directed some fairly successful, quote-unquote, cult indie-type films, The Pact from 2012 and At the Devil's Door. I remember both of those films. The Pact was pretty damn good. I never bothered seeing At the Devil's Door. The film actually has a pretty big name, at least for television, starring in it. Taylor Schilling is the lead actress of the film, probably best known for as the lead actress on Orange is the New Black. Since I've never watched that show, I didn't know who she was until I looked.
You've never watched that show?
No. Well, never.
He's going to wait 10 years and then
just
turn it into another meme again.
I'm just surprised that somebody that likes boobs as much as Phil has not watched that show.
That's a fair point.
It's really not the point of the show, though.
I know, but they're prominent. They're frequent.
Yeah, I don't know. Are they just as frequent as Cox were in Oz?
I haven't seen that, so I can't make the comparison.
Oh, okay.
See, Eric hasn't watched that important show either. I haven't watched Oz either. So. And then a bunch of various other unknowns. There's a little boy in the film who I found out through Bill Casolini from the Horror Mafia podcast was played Georgie in the It film. So this is, I guess, his first leading role after a small supporting role in It Part 1. And a few other people that I'd never seen before. So that's all I got. Written by some guy named Jeff Bueller.
Bueller? Bueller?
That's right. All right, so I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So let's start with you, Chrissy.
Well, I had seen the trailers for it, but I forget what it was in front of. But I thought, okay, that looks like a creepy kid movie, but it looks like I just want to check it out. It just, there was something about it where I was like, yeah, I'd be interested in just checking that out. So that's how I heard about it. I saw this on a Saturday morning, because Tuesday we were expecting an ice storm, and so I didn't want to take the risk. And I was really glad I did, because there was no way I would have missed the show this week had I not gone when I did. So I went on a Saturday morning. I went to like a 10:50 show, and I mean, it was your typical audience. You could have heard a pin drop, but there weren't many people in there, maybe 10 or 15. But the energy of the crowd was just sort of low. I kind of got the sense that everybody sort of felt the way I did by the time the movie was over. Overall, I can't say that this was a god-awful movie, because to me, it wasn't. The acting was fine. Especially the kid. I thought the kid was actually a really pretty good actor, because, you know, kids are tough. It's hard to actually get them to do things right. The story itself was actually pretty solid and had a lot fewer problems than some other films that I've seen recently. The atmosphere was effective. In particular, there were some nice, creepy moments and some creepy imagery, which is where I think was just about the only place for me that this movie kind of excelled. But I just found it sort of blah and forgettable. I knew what was happening in the beginning. The moment I saw the gunshots on the man's body and the similar blood pattern on the baby's body, I just figured it out. And I was just kind of bored. I just found that there wasn't enough tension for me. It wasn't really suspenseful. I didn't find it scary either, but that's okay, because I don't judge a movie's quality on whether or not it's scary, because scary, as we've always said on this podcast, is very subjective, and somebody else might see this movie and think, oh my God, I'm really terrified. So I'm not making that judgment call, but I just really thought it was just kind of lacking. It was a lack of tension, a lack of suspense. There was a problem that I also thought it was predictable. Not predictable overall in terms of the whole story, but certain moments and tropes were very predictable. And I want to be spoiler free right now, but there was one moment that I just knew exactly what was going to happen, and I called it, and I was just like, oh man, there was at least two or three moments where I knew exactly what was going to happen. And so for me, and I actually Googled reviews after I saw this movie, which I don't normally do. And I found out that there were quite a few people who reviewed this and said, felt the same way I did. So I didn't feel like such a pariah. But that was my thoughts on it. So.
All right. Very good. All right. Let's go with you, Eric.
I can't remember how I heard about this movie originally, to be honest. But I ended up going on a Sunday afternoon, and it wasn't a full theater. There were maybe 15 people in there. There was a group of teenagers who, although I generally find teenagers annoying, they were relatively well behaved. They also had great reactions to the jump scares, so they were amusing me along with the movie. I made a joke when I was introducing the movie about not Alicia Silverstone and not Ben Affleck, because I kept on thinking to myself, boy, they really wanted to have Alicia Silverstone and Ben Affleck in this movie. They just cast cheaper versions. But I thought the acting was pretty solid overall. I agree with Christy that there were some predictable moments in the movie, but it didn't really bother me because, quite honestly, most movies I go see have predictable moments. And I think there was one missed opportunity that I'll talk about when we're in spoilers. And there were also a couple of two in particular moments that I thought were outstanding, and I loved them. And it probably left me feeling that this movie is a little bit better than it actually. I enjoyed those two moments so much. So overall, I enjoyed this movie. It's not a masterpiece, but it's solid entertainment.
All right, very good. For me, I heard about it because when I was doing the 2019 preview episode, it was one of the films that popped up. I think I mentioned it near the end as a film that was coming out. So that's how I heard about it. I saw it on a Sunday at 12:30. This past Sunday, 12:30 in the afternoon. It had about 50 and whatnot. They all seemed to like the film a whole lot. They were praising it as a great horror film. I thought it was a pretty solid film. There's some things that are typical that you see horror in genre. Horror is the bad seed kid, and this we already knew. It set it up where we knew why before the father and mother did. A lot, like, for example, Robin Cook is really good already. What's going on? And we follow the lead characters in those novels trying to find out the mystery. And so we're watching them trying to find out a mystery that we already know. And so that kind of is a disappointment in some of Robin Cook's weaker books. And you could argue that may be a weakness in this film because we already knew what was going on. So it really came down to how it played out at the end and throughout the film rather than the mystery, because we already knew it. And I thought it was pretty solid. I actually liked how it ended. In a sense, I did have one thing that I didn't get with the lead actress's character. But I do like the resolution. And so that made it jump up a little bit for me. So I would recommend it. I don't see how anybody who would see it at the theater would be disappointed with it. Obviously, Chrissy wasn't a big fan necessarily, but it is getting decent reviews, about 58% or something on Rotten Tomatoes, which isn't too bad for a horror film. So I would recommend checking it out. Mike.
Yeah, I stumbled across it with the 2019 research, but it was one of those, The Prodigy, Killer Child movie or whatever, and took no more or less note of it than that. And you know, when you do these things, you can find dozens of films, so I really just took no notice of it. I never saw a trailer for this. I never saw a commercial for this. So I was kind of surprised it was even a theatrical release. And then a couple of weeks ago, you had said, we're going to do it as an episode. I was like, we are? I didn't know it was a significant enough film to do as an episode. I liked it. I caught a matinee. I wasn't blown away by it. It did have one jump scare that got to me that I kicked myself for afterwards, but I give him credit because I didn't see it coming. And I think you have a real problem with this film that it's, I don't know, reminded me weirdly enough of a little bit of Child's Play. Yep. And you have the question of when, because here movie is finding out a mystery that we know the answer to. So would not have been showing it been better, but then would we have had the same level of suspense earlier in the film? Although, of course, we're going in knowing it's a killer child film, so kinda. We just didn't know why he was a killer child. Right? Or would it have, or is, was it better that we knew up front? And I really don't know what the solution to that would have been.
Yeah, that's interesting that you brought that up, because yeah, that was one of my thoughts as well, as I just stated too, Mike.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page. It's it is very predictable through the ending. The lead character makes a decision that I don't know really holds together too well, but
I would agree with that. Absolutely. That was, I mean, not to interrupt, but I think if it's the same thing that I have a problem with, Mike, then I totally agree with you.
Yeah, but yeah, at the same time, I'm used to that actress. Her character on Orange is the New Black has a history of making really stupid decisions that she thinks are a good idea. So maybe it's just, I don't know, it's just apropos, I guess. I don't know. It just, you're not thinking this one through all the way.
Right. Yep. No, and that was, it didn't fit the character either, I felt.
Well, it's just really, really out of nowhere. So, we don't want to get into the spoiler yet.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the spoiler yet either, but hold that thought, Phil, because I definitely agree with you, and I'll tell you why. So when we get to that point, I'll talk about it.
I think I'll probably agree 100% with what you state too, Chrissy. Mike, what are you going
to
say?
Yeah, I think this is a film that wants to be a franchise.
Oh, no doubt. The teenagers that saw the film said, oh, wow, it's set up perfectly for a sequel. So, yeah, that's a good point.
What was this film rated?
I think it was PG-13. I think so, but I'm not.
No, it's rated R.
Is it? Wow. For a rated R film, it's like, it doesn't have a lot of, it does. And so I've said many, 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 many times on the podcast, I have no problem with PG-13 movies. I really have none whatsoever as a horror film. I think they can be well done. This one just, it didn't hit hard enough, and so it felt like a PG-13 movie, which is not a good thing when you're actually a rated R film.
I know what you're saying. At the same time, when we get in the spoiler section, I'm pretty sure I know the scene that earned it an R rating.
I think I know what you're talking about too, Eric. We'll discuss when we.
Yeah, and I mean my guess, and I'm curious to hear what you think, because maybe I'm not remembering a lot of details right now as we're thinking about it. Is because I remember this happening with, Are You Afraid of the Dark? What was the movie?
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark?
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Or basically got a rated R because there was the entire film was a child in danger. And okay. I guess the ratings boards has issue with stuff done to children.
Well, or done by children. Or done by children. I think that's what got the R rating here.
So I'm thinking that might be.
I thought it was maybe the threats the child makes to a social worker.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was kind of, yeah. So I think we'll discuss that when we get the spoilers. Okay, so it's an R-rated film, yeah, and I guess it does pull some punches.
It's an R-rated film that does feel like an R-rated film.
Right.
No, I agree. I just don't pay that much attention to ratings.
Well, neither do I, but it's I was just thinking about that in hindsight. I was like wondering, did it really? No, it didn't really have any like shocks or something that like where you go, holy shit, did you see what that kid did?
Yeah, so I wonder how a lot of these teenagers got into the film. They may have snuck in or something. Oh, you know what? Yeah, I know how they got in.
You know, the movie theater is pretty much staffed by teenagers. So
yeah. actually, what they do now at my theater is you buy, they don't even have a counter person anymore. You use the computer machine to buy your ticket.
Well, that's true. Like yeah. I can't remember. They do have places for you to buy tickets from actual yeah. people at the theater I go to. They're never manned.
Right.
Everybody either uses the app like I do or uses the multiple kiosks there. It's yeah. kind of funny.
And that's what I think that these kids probably did to get in, that were like 16 or 17 or 15.
Effort for certain movies to put somebody by the door and make sure nobody super young is going in.
Right, and a rampage.
But other than that, it's pretty much the Adern system.
All right. Anything else, Mike, you were saying?
No, that's it. I'm done.
All right, sounds good. So I think, Eric, do we have our wiki?
Wiki. All right. A mother concerned about her young son's disturbing behavior thinks something supernatural may be affecting him.
All right.
That's it. Well.
Yeah, that's that's interesting. Yeah. It's odd, too, that they do say that, because there is a father involved who's actually lives with the family, but just like this little description, the movie doesn't have the father present a lot, which is interesting.
Yeah, he's just kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, well, they write him out early on in a way that didn't really feel natural to me.
Well, it's because they couldn't get Ben Affleck.
Ba-dum-bum. It is weird. I mean, we'll discuss the how they write him out and focus. Yeah, because it's almost like it's a single mum film. So it's you wonder, changed the script in the middle and said, you know what, we got to bring in the father and whatever. So I don't know. It's kind of odd. But, yeah, we'll discuss that. All right. So, yeah, that's a fair description, though, for a wiki, because it doesn't give away anything, which is good. And I don't think it's a spoiler, since we learn it pretty quick. Is that it's actually a supernatural film. And I was expecting non-supernatural film.
It depends
film.
On how you define the supernatural.
Yeah,
it also depends on if you buy the load of crap they're selling you in this movie.
Right.
Which we do want to throw up a spoiler flag before we discuss.
Well, I would say, Eric, if you believe, you know, whether you believe in demonic possession or not.
Or
I would say, you're right, spirit, I would say that counts as possession. Supernatural, so yeah. I would count this as supernatural, even though some people might buy the load of what they're selling.
Well, well, let's throw up a spoiler flag, please.
No!
We can't really talk about this movie until we do.
We want to continue to talk about it awkwardly.
All right, so let's throw up the spoiler flag, and we can discuss why it is or is not supernatural. I mean, they even actually speak of what they claim happens in this film, which is interesting. It shows they say it's completely different. So, spoiler is up.
Okay, spoiler flag up. And in this movie, eventually what they try to explain to the audience is, okay, the very first scene of the movie is we see this serial killer, his latest victim gets away, minus a hand, and goes and police get called, and the serial killer pretty much commits suicide by cop. And at the same time that he's getting shot to death, a child is being born, and apparently his soul ends up going into that child. So, now
that's supernatural. That's supernatural.
Well, hang on.
Okay.
Let me get to the point here, which is that the way they try and explain it in this movie is they half at, like, I think it's really bad. I think it's not accurate. I don't think it's what's actually going on, but they label it as reincarnation. And I'm pretty sure if you spoke to people who believe in reincarnation, they would say that's not actually supernatural. That's just the way of the universe.
Okay. When you're ready, Eric, I have a few comments related to
that. But I think they would also say that
you might know more about this than I do, Chrissy.
That reincarnation is not about souls temporarily possessing a body, because they make it clear in the story they tell about the kid from India, that once the soul accomplishes that which it wants to accomplish, it leaves. And
well,
that is
right.
totally
and that's
not...
I don't think it's reincarnation, which is why I refer to it as a load of crap.
Well, I also think reincarnation is a load of crap, but, yeah, you know, right, Phil. So,
Okay, well, I kind of have, if you guys are ready, I do
We're
have
never
a few...
ready for you, Chrissy.
Oh, I know. It's sad. I'm just too much to take. Everybody tells me that.
One woman amongst three boys.
It's all good.
Notice he didn't say that.
So, I'm gonna start from the beginning with this, because this was the part of the movie that I was really interesting in discussing, just because I understand, basically, they boiled it down to reincarnation, but what they're really talking about is transmutation, which is connected to reincarnation, but it is a completely different, it's a completely different thing. All right, so let's all assume, just for shits and giggles here, that we all believe in this, okay? Because if my explanation is, we just have to assume that this is a thing that happens if I'm going to explain this. Because this is kind of what they did. What gave the movie away for me, as you said in the beginning, Mike, was that we kind of know, so we know what's going on. But what gave it away for me was the wife in labor was juxtaposed with the raid on this killer's house, right?
It wasn't subtle.
And
it wasn't subtle, yeah.
It was not subtle at all. But right before he gets killed, there's a long shot of his basement workshop, the killer's basement workshop, and we see a bird in a cage. There's significant focus put on this bird, and I knew immediately from that this guy was basically going to go into this baby's soul. But that it wasn't going to be a reincarnation story. It was going to be a transmutation story. Okay, because bird connection and witchcraft. So it didn't really matter which freaking kind of bird it was. Because I don't think we could really tell anyway. But, like, sparrows are connected closely with the soul. Like, the Egyptians believed that sparrows catch the soul of the deceased and bring the soul to heaven and then leave it there. So they are carriers of the soul. So it's a form of transmutation, not reincarnation. In the folklore of old Europe, seeing a sparrow was an omen that someone was about to die. So are depicted, remember, from The Seventh Sign. The guff was like a big deal in that movie, The Seventh Sign. Times the sparrows bring the souls from the guff to a newborn, and put the soul into a newborn. So again, you're talking less about reincarnation and more about transmutation. It's been a long time. I actually did not look up the guff today. So if there's anybody out there that, you know, has a problem with what I'm saying or knows it's incorrect, please feel free to share it, because I really didn't look it up. I didn't have time.
DocDiscussions@AOL.com.
Yes. Go, please feel free to. If a person sees a cardinal, it's believed that the deceased loved one is coming to visit and is being temporarily carried by the bird. Some Native American tribes, I want to say definitely the Cheyenne, maybe the Lakota. There's probably a bunch of them. Mostly out in the Southwest there, believe that, or the Northwest. I'm sorry. I'm a little fuzzy on where all my tribes live.
Native American folk. Yeah.
Native Americans. Yeah. But there's only specific tribes, and that's really important.
Right.
They believe that owls can be embodied by a spirit of the dead. So the appearance of the bird in this cage was an immediate signal to me that this film was going to be about reincarnation in some way, but not reincarnation as in the traditional Hindu sense, or the, I'm sorry if it's not Hindu, if it's another religion, I apologize, but not in the traditional spiritual sense, let's say, of I am a soul that is reborn in a completely new body. This is a very temporary thing. And the bird kind of just told me that immediately. But the concept of transmutation of the soul is dealt with a lot in Edgar Allan Poe stories. There are references to transmutation in his canon of work all over the place. The most famous one is the short story Morella, and that really focuses on it. I mean, there's others, but I can't think of them off the top of my head. But transmutation is the idea that the soul can jump from one body to another at the moment of death. And they kind of did that nicely in this film also with beside the bird. They showed it with the growing shadow on the floor. And in the moment when Miles turns around and we see the killer's face, and which to me was terrifying. I thought that was brilliantly done, that moment. But those images for me are tied to the idea of transmutation. So, Eric, I know this was a long roundabout way to getting to it, but you are correct in saying that this was kind of bullshit the way they were explaining it as reincarnation.
Thank you.
I think they did not want to go into the whole explanation of what transmutation is, because it's just the idea of transmutation is so much more complicated.
Here's the thing,
it just is. It's easier for an audience to understand reincarnation than, well, in transmutation, it kind of lives in the same body, but it's temporary.
Well, that's fine. Then just don't. Just don't label it. Just briefly explain it.
Right. Or as you said, Chrissy, they just use reincarnation as a synonym for what this trans whatever thing.
Right, transmutation.
Because everybody knows what reincarnation is, basically.
Right. But there is a difference.
And it bugged me a little bit, but I'm
not defending the film for doing that, Eric. I'm just saying I understand why you were sitting there saying it was bullshit, because when I was sitting there watching this movie and the second they said reincarnation, I'm like, well, no, dude, what you're doing here is transmutation. And the thing is, the writers knew it, or they wouldn't have put the bird symbol in there. They wouldn't have done. They knew it. They just wanted to dumb it down.
Well, and that may have been off.
Yeah,
it may have been the studio note. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, and Eric is sitting there like Vizzini from Princess Bride. I don't think that word means what you think it means.
right. But I'm
sorry. That was the.
Even though I knew that it was different than reincarnation, I kind of knew what they meant, and I knew that they were just using that word to dumb it down. And all they had to do was add a sentence. It's not really reincarnation, but think of reincarnation. Basically, what it is, this other soul, it happens to jump into another body to finish off its duty before it passes to heaven or wherever, and that's what this soul is doing now to your son.
Yeah, it's splitting hairs. Maybe it's because I don't believe in any of it to begin with.
Well, but the thing is,
I don't care. For me.
I would have enjoyed this movie more if they had just said transmutation. I would have been like, oh my God, that's cool. This is like an Edgar Allan Poe thing now. This is what Poe was talking about. That just would have made the movie so much more rich.
Well,
because
it still was what he was talking about. They just called it the wrong thing.
All the time. You know what I mean? But this transmutation idea, there's not a whole lot of films and books now that cover that. I mean, Poe was like, as far as I know, I don't know, maybe I'm not well read enough, but Poe was like the last one I know that went all batshit crazy on this transmutation shit. Nobody else has really done it fully, I don't think. I could be wrong.
Right. But you know what?
Discussions at AOL.com.
There's a couple of things. One is, it doesn't matter if Mike and me think it's all horseshit anyway, because the point is that this is a fictional movie. You know, I mean, I generally, I'm a Catholic and believe in the Catholicism religion and what they say, but I don't believe that something like The Exorcist could happen. You know what I'm saying? So the point is you have to believe what they say.
Suspend
in the movie.
Your disbelief.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking
for. And we just spent a really long time saying they used the wrong word.
Yeah, that's it.
That's
not going to be enough of a thing. I'm so used to them to movies bungling technical facts about everything, you know, that
but
I'm not going to worry about the label being wrong.
Right. And this one was obvious why they used the word reincarnation instead of trans whatever, because
I get it. I even figured it wasn't the right word. And I wanted to make a note of that. That's all.
Well, listen, I just figured there probably wasn't going to be a whole lot to really talk about with this movie. So I figured, well, I could at least talk a little bit about transmutation and the difference between that and reincarnation. And maybe somebody out there will get something out of it.
I appreciate that you went into it. But it's also, I don't think that most people are going to let that stop them
Right.
Well, most people wouldn't even know.
Right.
Oh, I'm not saying it should stop.
Right. Like the teenagers that I saw.
We spent way too much time on. How about the dog?
Yeah, the dog. The dog knew.
Okay,
I'm just trying to get us to switch topics.
No, I had a big problem with the dog. Because
they called up, you knew that dog was toast.
Oh, and it was so
I knew the dog was dead the second you saw it watching her go into labor.
Yeah.
It was a cute puppy, too.
But I just, that really bothered me. That, to me, was so tropey. And then the shit with the flies. And then I was like, oh, my God, okay, the dog is dead. Like, I knew the dog, the kid killed the dog the second they said it went missing.
Right.
Well, that's what always...
Wait for the dead dog to show up. Okay.
Well, that's what always happens in these children horror films is that the child who's a sociopath is going to kill the pet. And sure enough, it happens. And it's like, can't they do something different? So I agree. This was a huge trope that was unnecessary.
In fairness to them, that's what real crazy children do.
That's true. They are sociopaths, and they kill...
animals is what... Like, there's some trifecta of the serial killer. I think it's bedwetting, killing animals, and one
fires,
other thing.
And starting fires.
That is starting fire, yeah. That's like...
Liking The Office.
Me and Eric are normal, so don't.
I don't know if I'd describe myself as normal. Anyway, I want to talk about a few things I did like about this movie.
Yeah, there was a lot of good things to like about it, actually.
So one thing that I really enjoyed, and it was used for a couple of different jump scares, but I thought I give them credit because they were effective jump scares, is there were a couple of scenes where... you saw the boy, and I think it was usually when the mother was dreaming, but you saw the boy transform, like he would walk through a shadow and come out the other side transformed with his head into the face of the killer.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was super effective. Anybody else?
Yeah, there's a scene in that early on in the film where you're just looking at it, and the boy looks wrong.
Yeah.
You can't quite figure out why he's wrong, and they're just morphing part of the kid's face with the killer's face.
Mm-hmm.
And we should point out, it's a minor plot point, it's just a thematic thing more than anything else, that the boy has one brown eye, one blue eye.
Yes.
Yeah.
The heterochromia. And so he already looks a little he's off.
He's part husky.
Right. there was one scene that worked really well. This was the jump scare I mentioned where they're in the hallway
and mom's
looking at the kid and the kid runs up to mom and
transforms into the killer.
And transforms into the killer because he's out of frame for like less than a second and just pops up as the killer. And that I was not expecting.
That was super effective. And that was one of the moments when the teenagers were amusing me because they all screamed in unison. It was hilarious.
Oof. Gotta give credit.
I think creepy moments and creepy imagery and some of those jump scares, that's where I have to say I did really like this film. There was some shit in here that was just completely unnerving. Like the mother standing in the room and you just hear the kid say, go fuck yourself. Oh my God. That was chilling. It was absolutely chilling. Like every hair on the back of my neck stood up. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to see that in my nightmares tonight. Like that was just really well done. And I will give points to the film for at least doing that. There were so many wonderful moments like that.
I'll just see that in school the next day.
Oh my God. Well, that moment when he's like, can I sleep with you tonight? And then he crawls into bed with her.
Oh, that was super creepy. Yeah.
Oh, when he
puts because she already knew that he was bad at that point.
Right. But he puts his hand on his mother's shoulder and it's almost sexual.
Yeah. I was waiting for him to cop a feel. It was
so
super
creepy. Oh my God. So well done. I mean, there were just a few moments like that in this movie that just, I was like, damn, that is awesome. Like,
The moment that I probably, that hit me the most is when he was talking to, Phil referred to him as a psychologist. I don't know if they ever actually slap an official title on this dude, because he's the one that introduces the...
I said social worker, actually.
Social worker. Yeah. I don't know what he does, because he's also the one that introduces the concept of quote-unquote reincarnation.
Right.
So I don't know what his deal, but anyway, he's involved, and the mother takes the kid to talk to him, because the guy wants to hypnotize him and basically find out who the person is that's inhabiting him. And so they're in this session, and the kid goes so fucking dark, and I'm pretty sure this is why the movie got an R rating.
My opinion, too, yeah. I agree with this.
Because he says to the doctor, oh, you're not going to say anything to my mom, because when I went to your bathroom earlier, I took some of the pills that are in your cabinet, and if I tell everybody that I just woke up and had your cock in my mouth, what are they going to think when they find the pubic hairs I took off your toilet seat and put into my mouth?
I know.
What the fuck?
That was insane.
God, I hope he was bluffing.
Well, and then there's that part where he's in the car with his dad, and he just goes something about your father was a piece of shit. And it's like the way he says it is so like, oh, my God. There was a lot of moments like that.
So there were the kid did a great job when he went super dark.
Super dark. The kid
do that part, because not all parents would be willing to let their kid of that age do something like that, but it worked well.
Super dark.
And then of course there's the movement towards the end of the movie. Where he finishes what he came back to do. And that was, I was not expecting that. That was way more,
Chekhov's severed hand.
Graphic and convincing than I thought it was going to be.
Indeed. So let's set this up. We discussed what most likely happens and whatnot, but We begin to, you know, because of the, as you said, Eric or Chrissy, that at the same time the serial killer dies, a baby's born, and the soul jumps into the baby's body. And I think we've seen stuff like this before, actually. Even The Omen kind of alludes to that. At the same moment of birth, they kill whatever. But either way, various things begin to happen. Like the boy dreams and he's speaking in a foreign tongue, and she records it. The mother records it, and she says, "You're having a nightmare." And he says, "No, actually, it was a good dream." And the social workers, she brings him to, and then they bring in this second social worker guy, which is the guy that talks about reincarnation, and he's the one that identifies the language as Hungarian, and she mentions that her family isn't of Hungarian descent, so she has no idea how this could be. And then he says, this is weird, you know, not necessarily good. And she goes, why, you know, what's the big deal? He said it was a good dream. And then he says, yeah, but if when I translated the words, it basically says, I'm going to kill you, you fucking bitch, and you're dead or something. And so that, right. So that's not necessarily a good sign when the boy says, yeah, it was a good dream. He's speaking a language that he shouldn't be able to speak. And the things that he's saying are horrible things. But we already kind of gathered this. Again, this is what Mike said and I said earlier, which is we already know that the serial killer is in his body. So there's no real surprise. We already know that. And I think the question is, would it have been better if they'd done like The Orphan, where there's a mystery that we find out later in the film, rather than learning right off the bat?
Well, I don't know, because it's kind of about us finding out when the parents learn about it, right?
But you know what? That scene at the beginning was so obvious that, okay, the serial killer dies.
That's what I'm saying is that it's not about us finding out what's going on. It's about the parents finding out what's going on.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I use that analogy about one or two of the weaker Robin Cook books I've read, where the characters are wasting like 50 pages of trying to decipher something that we already know. And it's like, it kind of makes the book boring. And not that this was boring by any means, but it takes away a little bit of the suspense I felt, even though...
I hear what you're saying, but if they hadn't shown us that at the beginning, mm-hmm. then how did they go about explaining it later? I think it would have been super clunky if they tried to explain it without showing us that scene.
Well, this is what I'm thinking, is the Hungarian language could have been the key, the clue that would have led somebody, whether it's the mother or the social worker or somebody, to go research something. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, then this would have been one
I
of those.
I do, and that makes sense to us because we already know what happened.
Yeah.
But if they just have Hungarian language to go off of, how do they get, you know...
Right.
Well, this is a universe in which not only is reincarnation and transformation real, but apparently no one's ever heard of Rosetta Stone. Yeah, explain. I mean, it's...
What's that mean?
It's a thing like that to teach yourself new languages.
Gotcha. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so it's a huge leap, right? Oh, he speaks a foreign language. That's never been weirdly cited before, but it is something that kind of goes with reincarnation, right, where people say, well, you know, clearly you're speaking French, you must have been Napoleon in a past life.
It's also something that goes along with possession,
and it's something that goes along with possession, so yeah, I guess kind of goes into there, but it's just a weird jump that they made. But you know, at the same time, how long do we really want her to be researching this when we're already three laps ahead of her to begin with?
Right.
Right.
Well, and the other thing, too, I will say that I really did appreciate the fact that, yes, it was a leap that they made, but I appreciated that they chose a rare form of Hungarian instead
That's
of
true.
Like
That's true.
The typical, like, oh, it's this ancient Latin thing that nobody's spoken for 1,000 years, you know, like all these, like I was ready for the trope.
Right. They said, it's basically
demonic shit now.
Aramaic.
Basically,
yeah, Aramaic. Exactly.
It's Hungarian, but it's a lesser used dialect from an area of Hungary that's near the Romanian border. They said, but at least it's a legitimate language. It's not a language from 2000 years ago.
Yeah. But. And I kind of appreciated that only because it was an interesting choice, because for me, it grounded it in reality a little better. I was like, okay, yeah, this is not so far out of the realm of possibility. I don't know. It grounded it a little more for me, which I liked. And I just thought it was an interesting choice. I also appreciated it, though, personally, because my grandmother spoke Hungarian. So it was kind of fun, because before they identified the language as Hungarian, I was picking up.
So you're part Hungarian.
Well, yeah, very tiny.
Or she's been possessed by a Hungarian serial killer.
I have been. Yes, I'm actually a transmuted soul is what you're talking about.
No, this would explain a lot.
Yes, it would.
Continue your point, though. So you knew it was Hungarian because you've heard the language
Hungarian,
before.
It was just interesting because I'm like, this is not Hungarian I've heard before. Like, I could pick up a word or two, but like the dialect was weird, and I'm like, okay, I'm not sure. Maybe they made up a language. So I don't know if this is actually a real dialect that they used, or if it's something that they invented for the film and just took regular Hungarian and messed with it. They might have, because I was only able to pick up a couple of words. And I mean, I do not speak Hungarian. If you spoke to me in Hungarian, I would understand that I was hearing Hungarian, but I wouldn't be able to translate it. There was just a couple of words where I was like, oh, I know that word. Like, I've heard that word before. You know, so, but at the same time, the way they did it, I wasn't sure too if it was maybe because the kid was whispering and it was so creepy, and the way he was jerking around on the bed, it was just really creepy. So I liked that. I think that was an interesting choice and well done. And I was really glad when, like you said, Eric, they weren't like, it's Aramaic. And I would have been like, oh my God, here we go.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. The Hungarian thing too, Chrissy, because when they said it was a foreign language and not like, you know, some dead dialect, I thought that was pretty cool. And made it more realistic. And it makes more sense because based off of the part of the country that this takes place in Pittsburgh, and so near the Ohio border. Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was Ohio.
No. The families from Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania. Okay.
Which, and Pittsburgh suburbs. And then the serial killer was just over the border in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, because Pittsburgh is fairly close to Ohio. So it makes sense because there's a lot of Hungarian folk over in that area. So the demographics made sense. Cause, indeed. All right. So what else did we want to bring up?
I did want to say that I thought that Taylor Schilling was pretty good in this movie. I'd like to see her in more things. I think she's a good actress. And even though this movie wasn't the best of all time, I thought she was solid in it.
I had never seen her before because, again, I never watched Orange is the New Black, and I don't know if she's ever been anything else. But, yeah, I thought she was pretty solid as well, Eric. She played the role really good. And she's also from Boston, by the way.
Wicked awesome.
Yeah, wicked awesome. So, yeah, I would be glad to see her in other items too. I don't think that's going to really happen much because she's like this. Unless you really break out, it's tough to get big roles. So, if anything, she'd probably stick to smaller films like this, I would think.
Well, we'll see. Orange and Blue Black has been pretty successful.
Well, I know, but a lot of famous television show actors and actresses do a few films, but they never break out, you know?
I know what you're saying. I think that equation is changing with the advent of streaming services.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at, like, for example, Dexter or Game of Thrones, and not many people really have jumped out. I'm not saying it can't happen, and I'm not saying...
No, I understand the point you're making.
Well, the problem is we're living with such a fractured audience that what is a hit means is a very different thing than what a hit used to mean.
Yes, that was kind of along the lines of the point.
So I had just recently watched, on a lark, I rewatched the original season, because there's only one season of Battlestar Galactica, the 1978 version. And that had, like, twice the viewership of some of the top-rated shows now, and it got canceled.
Right.
You know, it just was such a different time, and the expectations are so much higher. Now you get 6 million viewers, you know.
And what show was that again, Mike?
The original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know, they had, like, 24 million viewers.
Yeah, yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, and again, a lot of these actors and actresses, you just don't know. I mean, if you don't watch certain shows. I mean, for example, Breaking Bad, my first time ever knowing who Bryan Cranston was from the movie Drive, not because of Breaking Bad. And so when I finally saw him in Breaking Bad, I go, oh, I know that guy from Drive. You know, and same with Jim Krasinski. The first time I ever seen him was in A Quiet Place. And so when I started watching The Office, it's like, oh,
that's
really
crazy to me.
I don't watch TV much. I'm not a television person much.
Right.
So you know, like my wife, she never seen Dexter, so she had no idea who Anthony Michael Hall was, you know, or the chick that played his sister. Well, me and you knew who those two actors and actresses were, you know. So it's just weird, like you said, Mike. It's so fractured. If you don't, like, you know, my wife gets Star Magazine, and there's a lot of actors and actresses that she may not even know because it's like some show that she's never watched. And, you know, she watches TV much more than I do. So it's just interesting.
I mean, you remember there was a time where you could get, it was September 1st. You pick up the new issue of TV Guide and have all the new series there. Right. And you could say, oh, I want to watch this or I want to check that out. And now it's, you know, you get a new show and it's on, you know, the Gulf Network is a serial killer show, whatever. You know, it's just because no show ever has anything to do with the original name anymore.
Right.
But there are just so many shows. Have you ever heard of this show? No, I've never heard about it. Oh, it's in its 18th season. You know, really?
Right. Right. Oh yeah. Like the Vikings is supposed to be a really good show. I've never
And that's
seen
in like sixth season now, or
yeah,
it's insane.
And I've never seen it. So any actor or actress on that show is like, I would have no idea who they are.
Different people are also drawn to different material. Like we're all very excited about seeing Heather Langenkamp at ScareCon, but if you mention that name to somebody who's not into horror movies, they're going to be like, who?
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if you mention Nightmare on Elm Street, they go, oh.
Right, but they don't recognize her name. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Right, that's a fair point. Yeah. So let's talk about the mother. Chris, you probably have this, and Mike, I think, did as well, had the same issue with the mother. What she does at the end of the film, it didn't fit with the type of person she seemed throughout the film before that. You know what? Before you begin... It reminded me of Rosemary's Baby, where you have this woman who's fighting for her sanity and for her child's soul. And then at the end of the film, spoiler alert, the devil's son with black eyes, and she decides to be, okay, I'm going to be the mother of the child. And it's just like, what?
Spoiler alert from the 60s.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's like, it was the stupid, 50-year-old film. So it was like a stupid ending for that movie, because the character completely was out of the way she acted throughout the film. And then I felt this kind of was
their children.
Well, but
we're not doing a Rosemary's Baby thing, but I just always took it as sort of a mental breakdown on her part.
Well, but here was my problem with it. I agree with Phil that the plan to go and kill the woman to try to finish the business did not work. However, it seemed out of character, but the reason it seemed out of character was because this woman, to me, and this is the way I think the character was written. Okay, I'm not saying the actress did not do her job, because that is not what I'm saying. I think it wasn't written right. She never got desperate enough. To me, she never appeared to be desperate enough. She was like, oh, here's my child, he's a prodigy, but she's got all this creepy shit going on in her house.
Well,
and you're trying to tell me she doesn't lose her shit well before this, because this was going on for years.
It just
didn't work. I was like, dude, this woman's not desperate enough. Now all of a sudden she was like casual. She's like, oh, I'm freaking out, I just thought I saw the face of this man and my son, but oh, I'm just going to keep him living here, and oh, maybe we should, like, 6 months from now, go to some dude. Like, it just didn't...
Father was right on board with you right on the beginning, right? We got to get him out of here. But continue, Eric.
Two points is that one, you mentioned it went over the course of years, but yeah, we only saw the spooky moments, right? we were subjected to all your 8 years of mostly mundane day-to-day activities with occasional creepy moments. We just saw creepy moments. So it seems more drastic, perhaps, than it was for somebody living through it. And the other point is that towards the end of the movie, I can't remember if it's the same social worker or not, but somebody tells her, look, you're running out of time. If this doesn't get taken soon, your son's going to disappear. And that's what makes her desperate. So I mean, I understand that there was a drastic switch in mood, and perhaps they could have done that a little more gradually. But I don't think it was completely ineffective to make her desperate because somebody told her son's about to disappear forever.
But, all right, that's fair. I mean, I guess you could jump there. I guess the way I think is I don't know if I would take other people's lives even to save.
Well, you always say this, people, Phil. I guess you just don't love your children.
Well, but
then if I save my own family's life and damn my own soul to hell, it's like, what was the point of life?
To save your family's life.
and then damn myself to hell by murdering
someone. But here's the thing too. It wasn't.
I mean, it's not like the. In other words, the person that they murder isn't a violent person that's trying to kill my family. It's just an innocent person that you murder. It's disgusting. But go on, Chrissy.
But I mean, I understand where Eric's coming from with the whole, you know, we're only seeing the creepy moments. But she does make a point in the beginning of the film that, oh, we waited for so long. So this couple was trying. Like, this child is her entire life, right? Her entire life. And we should have seen that to a really almost over-the-top point that this kid was her entire life. There just wasn't enough of it. I don't think it was balanced enough, even if it was over the point of years.
That's fair.
Every time there was something creepy, there should have been tension between her and the husband. You know, there should have been something to just tell us that this was building. And that was my initial.
So, milk right,
but,
toast.
But my initial thing, too, about this movie was, I remember I said in the beginning when we were talking about my initial feelings about this film, there wasn't enough tension for me. So okay. I think there was a tension issue. I think she wasn't quite developed or arced the right way. I also think that she says, okay, I'm going to go finish the killer's business for him. Logically, that kind of didn't work for me. It would have worked if I had seen her to the point of crazy desperation that I wanted to see her
right.
at in order for me to
right.
buy that. But it right. didn't work because to me, she was too casual. And I was like,
right.
okay, oh, I'm just going to go kill this woman and it's all going to be fine. Like,
right. That would be an existential crisis.
This would be big shit.
To make that decision.
It just wasn't built right. That's, I'm sorry. I know. And it's okay. We can all disagree with each other. That was just my.
All right. I'm right there with you, Chrissy.
There's all sorts of problems. Here's the other problem. Chrissy, if you have something that you, I don't know, unfinished, a thing that you always wanted to do, is somebody else doing it for you going to satisfy you?
That's the bigger problem for me.
Yeah, right. That's the bigger problem. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Because I was like, why would she think that this is going to fucking work? After they had drummed into her, he has to finish his business. Like, okay. They said that to her like 3 times.
Right. Before we continue, let me just set it up so people know what we're talking about. Basically, the mother, the one survivor, the one that went to the cops and got the serial killer basically to be arrested before he suicided by cop, wrote a book about her experience. And the social worker who believes in this transcendental reincarnation thing basically says that this serial killer is back because he has to finish what he has to do before he'll leave your son's body. And what he wants to do is kill the survivor that basically got him, took him down basically. And so she says she makes this decision that she's going to go to the survivor, which also lives in Ohio, just over the state border, and find her and kill her for her son. So then the serial killer will be satisfied that the last victim that he was planning to kill is now dead. And there's the setup. Okay, now continue. Go on, speak.
Go
right,
ahead.
So, yeah, to me, it would have been more like the whole ending would have been more effective. And I've been thinking about it for a couple of days, you know, but you should have weeks, months to think about it if you're the writer. If she had set it up so that he could kill the woman, you know, the one-handed woman, whatever her name was. And
well,
in some
she
ways,
pretty
it would
much
have been,
did, but not on purpose.
Well, she did, right. Because she was going to kill her, which
right.
made no sense. And I don't know how I would have wanted the ending to go from there, but it was so obvious to me that they were going to end with the, it's too late now. I am possession of your little boy, and
oh,
you're going to die.
I see. I didn't guess that, but go on.
Yeah, I knew that. Okay, let's put it this way: when I knew that they were going to do the ending where the evil kid lives, because they've done that in almost every evil little kid movie, it seems. I would have gone either one of two ways, which is that mom helps him kill the woman, and then has to live with that secret, you know, and gets her son back, but has to deal with what happened. And of course,
that would have been better.
And that, or, you know, helps him kill the woman, and it's still too late, and now she's stuck, having now also been an accessory to murder, and basically, you know, the kid has something on her, and may be able to force her into.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. When the kid stabbed that woman, holy shit, that was awesome. Because, man, they did not pull any punches with that one. It was like,
yeah, that was an R rating right there. That, actually, when you think about it, that murder.
Yeah.
Another flaw I felt was that the serial killer kills his last victim. Finally, as this little boy, he kills this last victim. He could have just lied to the mother continuously and pretended that he was the boy.
Well, in my opinion, that was a lost opportunity at the end of the movie, because they had that scene where the mother asked him, when did my son go away? And he answered, when you said you'd love me no matter what. I think it would have been better if they kind of copped the ending from Primal Fear. And he said, your son was never here.
That would have been cool. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would have been
awesome. I was like waiting for him to say it. Right. I was like, oh, are they going to do that? That's going to be awesome. And then they didn't do that. I was like, oh, well, all right.
Well, and that's the thing is that what they did, it was like he was gloating, obviously, because I tricked you. But he didn't have to gloat because he could have just pretended he was still the little boy. And then he was really the serial killer.
I hear what you're saying.
But I'm also willing to accept the fact that here is this reincarnated Hungarian serial killer with a hand fetish.
No, he was American of Hungarian ancestry.
Okay, here's this reincarnated American rare Hungarian dialect living speaking person.
Yeah.
Who was a serial killer with a hand fetish? His judgment and his, you know, might not always be on point.
That's true.
I'm willing to accept that in a moment of triumph, he's just
a narcissist.
He's just too much of a narcissist and doesn't give a shit. And the other problem I had with all of this, because we are living in 2019 now, how did she think she was getting away with this?
Right,
that, you know, she was going to jail for this. She was losing her son.
That's a really good point.
She was going to save her son's soul or what have you. But I never got the sense,
Orange is a New Black.
I want to point out
that it would have been possible for her to get away with that if she'd been better at it. No,
yes.
If she'd been better at it.
Yeah.
Clearly, she is not a person who's thought about committing murder before because she was fucking all sorts of stuff up. But with that woman living out in the middle of nowhere, it would have been possible to whack her and take off and not leave any evidence. And what's the connection unless you're in on this whole reincarnation thing? She could have gotten with it.
Yeah, technically, you're right. There's a chance that she could have got caught, but there's a really good chance that she could have got away with it if she wasn't inexperienced fool. But,
right, because, I mean, if you're a cop and you find this woman murdered on a farm in Ohio, what's your connection to this mother and her kid in Pennsylvania?
Part of me wishes the father was more involved in this. I know he ends up in the coma at the end.
Right.
Because then at least she has a conspirator, right? Someone that they can talk about this with, right? She can, you know, that she can maybe not do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
and okay. you can have her making plans yeah, but to...
The thing is that she knows how silly the reincarnation story sounds to a person like me or you, and her husband was like me or you.
Yeah, but...
So she couldn't say that to the husband because the husband would say, "You fucking nuts. You want to murder someone?"
We have how many horror movies have we seen, Phil, where there's a guy or a woman who's a skeptic, and then just eventually they get worn down and they're finally willing to buy that, yeah, there really is a shark out there eating the swimmers.
Well, you know what, Mike? That's one positive about this film is they didn't go that route. They made the husband think like me or you, which is if they were told by their wife that our son is possessed by a serial killer because a quack doctor said so, we would say you're going to a mental hospital too, just like our son.
But there's times when you introduce a seed of thought, and let's accept for the fact that in the universe of this film, the quack doctor is right.
I understand that, but most people in this universe are going to still think like me or you, including the husband.
Right, but I also think that once you introduce the germ of idea, however much you reject it, there is just a natural human tendency to think sometimes superstitiously, you know, or to sometimes jump to conclusions. And when you get an idea that sounds far-fetched, if Arvin starts pointing in that direction, it might start getting harder
to deny. I don't know about you, but someone like me would still say, nope, it's not true. And also someone like me would say, nope, we're not murdering anybody.
Well, here's the thing, Phil. Somebody tells you your kid's possessed. Of course, at first you're going to say, nope. But after somebody says that to you, if you see your kid's head spin around all the way,
that's true.
What's the first thought that's going to pop into your mind?
Mm-hmm. But the father never saw any of that. It was only the mother.
That's what I'm saying. If they had built it up, if they kept the father involved in the film more, so he mm-hmm. sees more of what's going on, if he starts having those same visions that the mother is seeing,
you're right. But,
and they, if they start moving the ball so that eventually he buys in too, they realize they have to go kill this woman, even if he could still get into the coma.
Well, I don't know.
To take him out of that last bit, because if you have both the mother and the wife there, then the little kid is too easy to defeat, I think. But
even if you knew that this could work, I don't know if everybody would agree to do it, because murder is just disgusting. You see what I'm saying?
Not everybody is as opposed to murder as you,
yeah,
Phil.
There's a lot of people out there who
you're
are
a stickler for that one.
Yeah,
not all on the of same us page are. As you. And there
but
are
also, like I said, if she honestly had been the level of desperate that I needed to be, I just would have bought it.
Right.
You know what I mean? She
right. I would agree.
She was still too clear-headed for me to. That's what I mean. Right. Something like that.
Yeah,
really, I mean.
That's an existential crisis. She would be like sweating and freaking out about it, but
because
she was
of
like,
the character, because
I'm,
of the way
I'm
they
go and do this.
Well, because of the way they built the character. Now, if they had already made her going into this movie,
Chris,
a little unstable, a little not right. Oh well, then maybe I could buy.
Let me just interject for a second. I had more sweat and stress approaching some girls at bars when I was single than this woman had to go and kill some stranger in another state.
That's more intimidating.
I guess so, because she surely didn't feel intimidated to do it until she got there and actually pulled out the gun and says, no, I can't do this.
Well, but also, you know, to get back to the point about the father being more into this. Now, that would have been incredibly interesting if the father, as you guys suggest, were sort of a conspirator, right?
I didn't suggest it.
Okay, but whoever did, okay, because here's the interesting thing about that. They made a point of the fact that the husband's father was a piece of shit, was a bastard, was abusive, was all these terrible things, might have even been capable of murder. And the father is now, holy crap, you are asking me to participate with you
right.
to go kill a woman when, holy fuck, I'm going to turn into my fucking dad now.
Right.
That would have been an interesting.
Chrissy, I'm high-fiving you right now, even though you can't see.
High-five! Yeah, that would have been fucking super
well,
cool.
And that's what's awesome about the father's character, is that he knew right away that his son was a sociopath piece of scum, just like his own father was.
It was some Hungarian.
Right. But he saw what he thought was his son as what he knew his father was. And so that was what made this character awesome to me, the father, because he could identify with, oh my God, my son is becoming like my father. But what Chrissy said is awesome too, because then the mother could have brought this in, and whether or not he thought the mother was insane for believing reincarnation and a quack doctor, the brilliance of the father saying, I'm not going to become my father. Yeah. I'm just going to do it.
It just would have been really interesting.
Because he's been fighting and get away from that his whole life.
Right.
And that scene in the car with the kid was actually pretty well done. I like that.
Oh, I thought so too. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. And you know what, also, what was interesting? When the car hit the tree or the guardrail, whatever the hell it was, I don't know who did the sound design for this, but holy crap. Like, I felt that in my bones. I was just like, oh, like you could just
the other thing that like got to me is that they're in the car on the way to the place. Why are you telling the kid?
Yeah, I
on the way to the
you
place.
Don't even
why don't you, just, you get there? Where
basically,
are we, Dad? Well,
we're taking the son to a private school for the mentally insane, basically. But
you always specify mentally insane. Is it possible to be physically insane?
I've
never heard the term physically insane, but okay.
Did you see physically insane? Did you see Crispin Glover dance in Friday the 13th Part 4?
Let me
bring up another problem I felt about that scene, besides the father telling the son where they're going, is, and this is in a lot of films, not just this film, the moment something fishy happens, you just break and you pull over. You don't keep on driving when something fishy happens.
Yeah.
And this is a problem, not in this film, but in all films.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong, Phil, definitely.
Once the seatbelt is cut, you stop because you know something fishy is going to happen. So, and I don't know why these things happen in movies, and over these things happen.
Because they're movies.
I know, it pisses me off, and that scene pissed me off.
For the same reason that in movie after movie after movie, somebody drives into a tree and there's no airbag.
That's a good point too, Mike. That's a good point.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even notice that, but you're totally right. But
we never do. But it happened. But in real life, I mean, when was the last time they made cars without airbags?
Right.
Well, and you know what? Honestly, we probably don't notice it because of our age. I mean, we grew up in the generation where there were no airbags, like, let alone everybody wearing seatbelts all the time. Like, most of us kind of... What?
Don't tell everybody we're old.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's
I'm
right.
Not
Chrissy just had a birthday.
I'm seasoned. Fuck all y'all being old. I'm seasoned.
Had a birthday, and I'm having one in 9 days.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's. I'm just thinking, like, Dukes of Hazzard could never be a show now. Forget the.
Yee-haw! Oh, no. Yeah.
Forget the Confederate flag. Just every time they jumped a ravine, you know, they'd land.
Mike, plus. Plus, Waylon Jennings.
I want to see that version of the Dukes of Hazzard.
plus
airbags.
Plus, Waylon Jennings is no longer with us anymore.
Yeah.
So he can't narrate or sing the theme song.
Nicki Minaj to do it.
I don't think it would fit personally.
I think you're right. I don't think it would fit either.
Yeah, they did get Jessica Simpson involved in the movie, though.
Yeah, unfortunate.
I never saw the movie, so I couldn't tell you. But she looked good as Daisy Duke. She looks good anyway, but that's besides the point. So that was how they knocked out the father because he had, the seatbelt is cut. They don't have a airbag. And when they crash, because he didn't pull over or stop the car once the seatbelt was cut, he probably went through the windshield and landed in a coma. And he's going to be in a induced coma, actually, for, they said, 6 weeks or 9 weeks or something like that. What's funny about an induced coma? That's not funny. That's
no,
funny.
I'm laughing at what just appeared in Skype.
Oh, what happened in Skype? I didn't see it.
I see a cat.
Oh, I will say another kind of
Oh, I see Mike's cat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Another kind of nice moment that I liked, which I thought was really cool, was when the father is in the coma and the mother shows up and the kid's there at the bedside and the kid goes to hug the mother and she just holds her arms out. That was really, like, really nicely done, I thought. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yes. No.
Where she doesn't, the kid goes to hug her, and this is right, and she does not hug him back. She just holds her arms out, and I just thought that was really, really neat. Like, I liked it a lot. I just thought that moment was quite nice. In fact, I might steal that and use it in a short story because it's actually that good.
At that point, too, the serial killer was completely took over the body, too, I think.
Right, and she kind of knew that. And there were a couple of interesting things, too. Like, I thought it was really creepy when the kid said, I have to make room. Like, at night, he was like, I have to make room for things to come inside me or whatever. That was
creepy.
Yeah, there was some nice creepy dialogue in this. I will say that whoever did the dialogue for this did some really nice creepy stuff, and that I appreciated that.
The whole psychiatrist social worker scene where we kind of went over a little bit was, you know, like he wants to get the serial killer out of the boy, and the boy goes, you know, I took some of your medicine.
Oh, yeah. What you guys were talking about earlier. Yeah.
And I can say that you...
Eric was talking about it.
Yeah, I can say that you drugged me and anally raped me and all these other things.
Oh, no. I remember the exact phrase.
I have pubic hair.
Is he said, what if I tell them that I woke up with your cock in my mouth?
Yeah.
I was just like, whoa!
and I got the pubic hair from the toilet bowl.
Right.
And all this, the guy's like, holy shit. He goes, okay. And he goes, so you're going to go out there and tell my mother that I'm a normal boy and you made a mistake. And the guy goes,
and he's pretty much like, okay.
I got to say, though, it's an interesting plan. Can you wait until he does something before you put the pubic hair in your mouth? I'm just
saying.
You could have held it in your pocket.
Women's hands for amusement. I don't think that's really
that's what I was.
Well, and I did as long as the hand thing was mentioned, I did want to say that
he uses severed woman's hands for masturbation purposes. I don't think he cares about a few pubic.
Well,
hands.
No, I liked the idea of.
Yeah, it was pretty much implied.
I think Phil just made a giant leap there. I don't know where he got that.
It's pretty
well,
much
listen,
implied.
I liked the idea of hands because, and the fact that they didn't really explain that, because hands, particularly of women, female hands, have long been represented or have long represented something nurturing. They represent nurturing. They represent comfort, symbol-wise. So it tells us a lot about this killer's childhood.
And you got to note, Chrissy, all the hands had manicured nails as well.
Yes,
long manicured
exactly.
Nails.
They tell us that his obsession with these hands indicates that probably part of the reason he became the serial killer that he did was because he lacked that nurturing from his mother as a child. For whatever reason, we're never told why. But for some reason, that I also felt was well done in this movie, that they were sort of able to give us that little bit of backstory in through nothing else than showing us that he liked to sever manicured hands. Like, that was completely cool. I just thought that was interesting. But I just wanted to say that while somebody was screaming about he cuts off hands, I just wanted to bring that up before I forgot it.
I felt it was a really interesting concept for the serial killer, because it was woman's hands. Basically what Chrissy said summed it all up. And
Mike, turn your camera off. Your cat looks lonely and confused.
That's her face.
Interesting cat. Look at that. It's all...
Oh, just wait for one of the other cats to show up.
It's a cute cat, but it's making me sad. She wants to be pet.
So anyway, back to the film. So that was the thing, is that they got rid of the father with Lynn, but they had already gotten rid of him earlier because he has a big fight with the wife about the son. I mean, after the dog is killed, because he knows the dog. We do. And he moves out and goes lives with his parents or his brother or something, because he can't deal with the fact that they have a son that's a psychopath living in the house.
Well, no, he's accusing. He had made comments that he might have been hurting him. That the kid made comments that daddy may have been hurting him.
Oh, that's
right. That's what it was.
No, it wasn't that. What it was is he told the psychologist that he didn't want to tell about on the person that hurt him, and he was referring to the serial killer. But the mother assumed it was the father that he was talking about. Yeah, and he was pissed about that.
I would be too.
Yeah. So that whole thing was messed up. It's like, get the son out of here. He's got to go. Get him out. No sociopaths allowed. Period. Gone.
What did you guys think about him actually scratching the name in the couch? Because that kind of didn't make sense to me. If the killer, the kid was already gone by then.
From a technical standpoint, I could not.
That scene was before the scene when the boy goes into the bed with the mother. I think it was before. And if that's the case, then the boy was still inside the soul, as a soul.
Yeah, I'm really not sure.
Yeah, I think that was the boy acting out through this like subconscious and struggling for control.
Right.
Yeah. It was because it was late in the film when he enters the mother's room, and it was when the night the dog died. She finds the dog's dead, and the dog was still alive at that point. So the boy was still in the inside the body. Chrissy?
I was just thinking. I'm sorry. I was just thinking about that. I'm trying to remember if it was before or after. I mean, I thought it was kind of cool that he scratched the name in there, but then when you guys were talking, I was like, wait a minute, though. Does that make sense? Because wasn't the boy already gone?
Yeah, the boy, the moment
I'm not,
she, no,
I'm
the
not
boy
sure.
The boy wasn't gone yet at that point.
He wasn't gone yet. Okay.
Yeah, the night the boy was gone was the night the dog was found, because he goes into her bedroom and he says, "Will you still love me?" And she says, "Yes." And then he does that weird thing that was kind of sexual to her, and then the flies appear. And then she gets up and she goes to the basement and they find the dog. And the father was already gone at that point, too, because obviously he would have been in the bed if he wasn't. So, that was later in the film that whole scene happened. And then that's when the father came back after that they find the dog. But at that point, the boy's gone. So that's interesting. Yeah, another thing is they don't explain why these things happen and or anything like that, or why the boy or the intrusive soul will win the struggle. They just say that if you wait too long, the boy will be gone and the intrusive soul will take over. But they don't explain why.
The whole thing doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And
yeah, it's
and,
not something you want to think too much about. It's, you know, what was the significance? I mean, like I said, so I know it's an artistic thing, but was it supposed to make logical sense that they both had one color eye? Was that why he chose that particular child to jump into his body? Was because he had heterochromia?
Or did he get the two weird colored eyes when the soul entered?
Which changes your genes? Yeah. See, this is where I can't get on board with the whole thing. Yeah. But it's just you just kind of roll with it and say yes, the force exists. Move along.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. All right. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up, or scenes that we wanted to talk about, or someone wanted to bring up that we haven't brought up yet?
No, I'm good.
No, I'm good. The only thing I just wanted to point out was another thing that I did like about this movie. There was a really strong visual motif of doors in this, and I thought that was interesting because it was kind of like doors that the souls pass through. I mean, that's kind of the band name, The Doors, is named for the doors of perception or whatever. So anyway, that was like really the last note that I just wanted to mention. I don't have anything else really to say about this. I think this movie's pretty straightforward.
All right. All right. Fair enough. So I guess we can wrap it up then and just give our final thoughts. But first, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify.
Very good. Which also you can find Dark Discussions on all those places as well. Mike, you do a couple other podcasts with myself and Eric and a blog and things?
Yeah, the blog is on Natural Selections, www.unnaturalselections.com. And the other podcasts are You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast, coming back this April. Searching for American Gods, which should be coming back this March. And Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast that will probably be coming back sometime in 2020.
Very good. Chrissy, you do things.
I do. I am a writer of short, dark fiction, and you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
All right, and at www.darkdiscussions.com, you can find all the podcasts that Mike mentioned, as well as links to Chrissy's blog or homepage, as well as Eric's Askansity podcast. At the bottom of every page are links to our Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast, our email, darkdiscussions@AOL.com, Twitter, darkdiscussion1, and of course, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, you can find us, and also Anthony T's Horror Show, a spinoff podcast by one of our friends, is also on the feed, and you can find his podcast too on Dark Discussions podcast feed, as well as darkdiscussions.com. Also, Eric, there's a Patreon we have?
Yeah, there is. You can find the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. Patreon helps offset the cost of producing this podcast. There's fees involved for servers and replacing equipment and all that good stuff. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing the show, you can go there. And for every $5 a month you care to donate, we'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover. We take all the submissions and draw them on a quarterly basis. For more details, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
Yes, and again, you can find us in person at ScareCon New England. Just search for ScareCon New England on the web, but we'll give further details in the next 30 days or so. Also, we're going to be doing another trip to Mystic, and we'll give further details about that later. And then a couple of us may be going to Scares That Care in Williamsburg, and we'll give you further details on that as well, as well as various other things. So let's give our final thoughts on this film. So let's start with you, Chrissy.
Okay, so for me, in summation, this was not a super winner for me. I liked the idea. I really liked the fact that this movie talked a little bit more about transmutation rather than reincarnation, because they haven't finished something. I think structurally it was fine. There were a few small issues with it, as everybody's pointed out in this episode. The acting was good. For me, the predictability was just a little bit too much. I just really did not feel the suspense or the thrill. However, I do think that there were some beautiful, creepy moments in here. And for that alone, it's worth it. I'd recommend it for a Netflix, or if you can catch it on Redbox for a couple bucks, or, you know, a $5 Tuesday or something. But I honestly wouldn't spend more than $5 or $6 on this. I think it's okay. But for me, I think personally, it's going to be one of those movies that in 5 years I go, oh, did I see that? You know, and that's kind of always my judge. I'm like, if I'm not going to remember I saw this in 5 years, that means it really didn't impress me. So anyway, that's all for me.
All right, very good. Let's go here, Mike.
Yeah, this is not a movie that's going to rock your world in all likelihood. If you're a horror fan and you like to go see horror movies in theaters, you know, there's worse out there. I don't think it's a horrible waste of time. I think it's a perfectly passable film. This is almost certainly not going to end up on my top 20 list for the year. But I also don't think it's a candidate for, like, worst movie ever or anything. You know, keep your expectations in check. I think the sad thing is there was a lot of missed opportunity. They really could have had some fun, more fun, and been more creative with the concept. And, you know, I think if you look at something like Orphan, took the basic idea of the adult killer in the child's body and pushed it a little farther and was a little more creative with it. And this felt more predictable and safe. Which is unfortunate, but, you know, it's not horrible.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I thought it was a pretty solid film. I enjoyed myself. Didn't have any part of the film that I was like, why am I watching this piece of garbage at all? If anything, I actually enjoyed it more than anything. Though I will agree that it's not like a film that will be remembered. I mean, it's not like a classic or anything of that nature, but it's a solid entry in the evil child subgenre of horror. And if you like that subgenre, I think you'll like this film. Eric?
I don't particularly disagree with anything anybody said, but I think I was a little warmer on it than anybody else on the show. I liked it. I was entertained. And I don't think it's a must-see in the theater. But I do think it's a mild recommendation for me. It's not like, oh, you got to see this. It's like, oh yeah, that's worth a watch. So like Christy said, if you want to catch it VOD or whatever, it's going to be gone from theaters pretty quick. I have a feeling if you really do enjoy the theatrical experience, go see it quick. It might even be gone by the time this gets released. Yeah. So
yeah, there's a lot of big films coming out in the next couple of weeks.
I mean, it's worth giving a watch. Just don't set your expectations too high.
Right, and it's already made a profit. It cost only like $6 million to make. In the U.S. alone, it's made $7.6 million so far, and I think it's over $16 million. So it's a winner for Orion, even if it's not a blockbuster.
And I got to say, I love seeing that logo again.
Yep.
Same here.
Which, by the way, I want to point out, they also were the ones that did Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, there you go. The Prodigy, a new horror film from 2019, starring, Taylor Schilling, basically, the only real name, unless you don't follow TV, which I don't, so she was new to me, directed by Nicholas McCarthy, a fairly decent, director of, some independent horror films in the past, including The Pact, which was a pretty damn good ghost story. I know, Chrissy, you would love that film. And, Jeff Bueller was the screenwriter.
Bill, I've seen The Pact. I really do love that film. I own it.
Okay. So, anyway, once again, The Prodigy. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you leave us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about The Prodigy. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.